We watch the numbers climb again.
Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So today we're doing a deep dive into something that honestly feels a bit like a sci-fi thriller.
Yeah, it really does.
I mean, imagine a virus that silently circulates at county fairs. It's infecting pigs, it's infecting cattle, but quietly it possesses the exact biochemical keys to unlock human lung cells.
Right, which is a terrifying thought.
Totally. It makes you ask, have you ever wondered what happens in the shadows before a pandemic actually starts? Because, you know, we think of petting zoos or state livestock exhibitions as just wholesome family fun, right? You've got kids, agricultural workers, everyone just interacting with animals.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of overlapping contact.
But what really happens when a livestock virus figures out human biology? And the wildest part of this deep dive is we're talking about a pathogen that does not even trigger our immune system's early alarm bells.
No, it just sneaks right in.
Right. It's essentially a burglar who, I mean, they don't need to break a window because they already have a copy of your front door key, and they know exactly how to bypass the motion sensors.
That's a really good way to put it because, you know, we often picture cross-species transmission as this loud, chaotic biological event, like a sudden outbreak that immediately sends people to the hospital.
Right, the movie version of a virus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the reality of virology can be much quieter, much more subtle, and honestly, arguably much more concerning. When a virus learns to navigate a new host without setting off those alarms you mentioned, it buys itself the single most valuable resource in evolution.
Which is time, right?
Yes, time. Time to replicate, time to adapt, and time to just figure out the next step in its life cycle without being attacked.
Wow. So today we celebrate the work of Christina G. Sanders, Cody J. Warren, Andrew S. Bowman, and their extensive collaborative team across the Ohio State University, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, and Nationwide Children's Hospital, who have advanced our understanding of the zoonotic potential of influenza D virus.
Yeah, an incredible team. And we should note, this open access research was published in PNAS, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, back in April 2026.
Okay, so influenza D. I think most people have heard of A and B, but maybe not D.
Right, so to understand the gravity of what this team discovered, we really need to first look at the Orthomyxoviridae family.
That's quite a mouthful.
It is, yeah. But it's basically the broad family of viruses that includes all the types of influenza. So most of us are very familiar with influenza A and B. Those are the heavy hitters, right? The ones responsible for the seasonal flu epidemics we deal with every winter.
The ones we get the annual vaccines for.
Exactly, because they mutate just enough to require a new shot each year. And there's influenza C, which generally causes very mild respiratory illness in humans, mostly in kids. But then we have influenza D, or IDV.
The black sheep of the flu family?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, IDV is highly obscure to the general public. It was actually only discovered relatively recently, back in 2011.
Oh, wow. That is recent.
Yeah, it was originally isolated from pigs in Oklahoma. And since that initial discovery, cattle have actually been recognized as the primary reservoir, like the main host where the virus naturally circulates. Though, I mean, it has been found in a really wide range of livestock.
But humans aren't getting sick from it.
Well, for a long time, IDV has been somewhat ignored by major human public health monitoring systems because, to date, there are absolutely zero confirmed clinical diseases in humans caused by this virus.
Right, so no one is showing up at the emergency room with a confirmed, highly symptomatic case of influenza D.
Exactly.
But the sources for this deep dive show that an absence of severe clinical disease does not necessarily mean an absence of infection. The researchers point to some highly suspicious serological evidence. And by serological, we just mean looking at the blood work, right? Looking for the antibodies left behind after an infection.
Right, and what's fascinating here is that the virus spreads seamlessly in the mammalian surrogates we typically use to model human flu in the lab.
Like mice and ferrets.
Yeah, we are talking about ferrets, mice, and guinea pigs. It transmits via direct contact, and in the ferret models, it even transmits through the air.
Oh, wow. Airborne.
Yeah. But out in the real world, we aren't seeing massive, obvious human outbreaks. Yet, when we analyze the blood of cattle and swine workers, we see very high rates of IDV-specific antibodies.
Which means they fought it off.
Exactly. Even people in the general population, with no direct ties to agriculture whatsoever, have shown serological evidence of exposure. The immune system is essentially leaving behind wanted posters for a virus that supposedly doesn't infect us.
That is so wild. I mean, they've even found IDV genetic material in the nasal wash of a pig farmer, and they've captured it in bioaerosol, so basically genetic material floating in the air at airports and hospitals. So what does this all mean? If agricultural workers already have antibodies, is it possible humans are getting infected right now, but the symptoms are just so mild, we're mistaking it for a common cold?
Or not noticing it at all, yeah. That epidemiological footprint is the core mystery this study aims to solve, because the data strongly suggests humans are being exposed and likely infected. What we haven't understood until this research is whether the virus actually thrives and replicates in human respiratory tissue, or if it just enters the body, struggles to survive, and hits a biological dead end.
Right. Does it hit a wall or does it set up shop?
Exactly. So to answer whether this virus is truly compatible with the human airway, the researchers had to go directly to the source to find the virus and then bring it into the lab for rigorous real-world testing against human biology.
And let's talk about that fieldwork, because the sheer scale of it is staggering. We're not talking about, like, swabbing a few pigs at a local farm down the road. They conducted active surveillance from 2017 to 2020 at 422 separate swine exhibitions.
Yeah, it's a massive undertaking.
We're talking county fairs, state fairs, national jackpot shows, spread across 13 U.S. states. They swabbed the snouts of over 24,060 pigs.
The logistics of that active surveillance are just phenomenal and deeply necessary. Because national jackpot shows, for instance, attract swine from multiple states all into one single pavilion.
Right, a huge mixing pot.
Exactly. You are bringing together animals from entirely different geographical regions, creating a massive, chaotic mixing vessel for viral strains.
Like an airport for pigs.
Exactly, like an airport. Mm. And by swabbing tens of thousands of pigs in these specific environments, the team successfully isolated genetically distinct IDV strains that are circulating right at that human-animal interface. They basically curated a diverse, highly representative panel of these viruses, including strains isolated from cattle, to ensure they captured the full spectrum of IDV genetic diversity currently out there.
Okay, so they have this diverse lineup of live viruses pulled directly from the field. Now comes the hard part. Finding the virus at a county fair is only half the battle, right? The real question is what that virus can do once it is actually inhaled by a human bystander. So they brought these strains back to the lab and put them through what is essentially a biological obstacle course.
Yeah, an obstacle course is the perfect way to describe it. The first hurdle involved immortalized human lung epithelial cells, specifically a standard laboratory cell line known as A549.
Okay, what are those exactly?
They're essentially flat cells grown in a simple liquid medium in a petri dish. Virologists use them as a baseline just to see if a virus possesses the basic fundamental mechanical ability to enter and replicate inside a human cell line.
So you take this pig virus, you drop it onto these flat human lung cells, and what happens? Does it survive?
It cleared that first hurdle effortlessly. The virus entered the cells and replicated.
Just like that.
Just like that. But as we know, flat cells in a dish do not accurately represent the complexity of an actual human lung. The human airway is a hostile, incredibly dynamic environment. So they moved to a much more rigorous model, which was primary, well-differentiated airway epithelial cultures.
Okay, and this is where the models become much more physiologically relevant. I was reading that they grew these cultures at what is called an air-liquid interface, which, let's unpack this. They don't just submerge the cells in liquid like a normal petri dish.
No, not at all.
They expose the top of the cells to air, and they provide liquid nutrients from the bottom, which mimics exactly what is happening in the lining of your own respiratory tract right now as you breathe.
Exactly. And by using this air-liquid interface, the cells differentiate into the actual functional cell types found in a human airway. So you have ciliated cells, which possess these tiny hair-like structures that constantly beat back and forth.
To sort of sweep away debris and gunk.
Exactly. And then you have goblet cells that secrete a thick layer of mucus to trap foreign invaders. You have basal cells, club cells. It creates a microscopic forest of defense mechanisms.
Wow. And the researchers established these complex cultures using human bronchial cells, but they didn't stop there. For a direct comparison, they built the exact same types of air-liquid interface cultures using porcine or pig, nasal, and tracheal cells.
Right. And setting up that side-by-side comparison is crucial. It controls for cross-species barriers in a highly controlled environment. because by introducing the exact same viral strains to both human and porcine tissues simultaneously, the researchers could definitively measure whether the human tissue is just as welcoming to the virus as the tissue of its natural agricultural host.
And then they took it to the final, most extreme level of the obstacle course. They moved beyond cultured cells entirely and used actual three-dimensional slices of human lung tissue.
Yes.
I mean, okay, let's unpack this. They aren't just using flat cells in a Petri dish. They are using actual three-dimensional slices of human lung tissue. That is as close to breathing as a lab experiment gets.
It really is. We call these precision-cut lung slices, or PCLS. The researchers take actual human and swine lung tissue and slice it into sections that are exactly 400 micrometers thick.
That's incredibly thin.
Very thin. But at that specific thickness, the three-dimensional tissue remains viable in the lab. And crucially, it perfectly preserves the complex native architecture of the lung.
So everything is where it should be.
Exactly. All the different cell types, the extracellular matrix, the structural layout, everything is interacting exactly as it would inside an intact living organism.
So the stakes are incredibly high here. You have a livestock virus navigating the native three-dimensional architecture of human lungs. How did the human tissue fare against it? Does the human immune architecture just instantly crush it?
The data from this final obstacle course is impressive and, frankly, highly concerning. Mm-hmm. Because in every single model, the baseline immortalized cells, the complex air-liquid airway cultures, and the intricate 3D lung slices IDV replicated with astonishing efficiency in the human tissue.
Wow.
Yeah. When the researchers measure the viral titers, which is just the concentration of the newly produced virus, IDV frequently matched, and in some specific tissue types, even surpassed the replication levels of seasonal human influenza A.
Surpassed human flu.
Yes.
But how does a pig virus even get inside a human cell in the first place? I mean, doesn't it need a specific biochemical key to unlock the door?
It does. Viruses rely on specific cellular receptors to attach to and penetrate a host cell. Think of these receptors as highly specific docking stations on the surface of your cells.
Okay.
The virus must possess the exact right molecular shape to bind to that docking station. And the researchers found that influenza D virus primarily uses a receptor called NUA5009AC2.
NUA5009AC2. And the critical detail here is that this specific docking station is ubiquitous throughout the human respiratory tract. Like, it just coats our airways.
Yep, it's everywhere.
There is absolutely no structural barrier blocking this virus from entering human cells. The key fits perfectly and the door is just wide open.
It is. And once inside, the virus begins hijacking the cellular machinery to produce massive quantities of itself. However, the researchers observed a highly unusual phenomenon.
Which was?
Usually, when human flu viruses replicate at such high levels, they cause extensive cellular damage and death. We call this the cytopathic effect. The flu virus effectively shreds the host cells as it multiplies and bursts out.
Right, which is why your throat hurts and your lungs feel awful when you have the flu.
Exactly. But IDV caused minimal cytopathic effect. It replicated vigorously, producing vast amounts of new virus, yet it left the human airway cells largely intact and functioning.
So the virus walks right in, starts multiplying like crazy, but doesn't actually kill the cells right away. How does it survive the immune system, though? If it's multiplying, shouldn't the cells' internal alarms be ringing constantly?
You would think so.
Mm-hmm.
But this stealthy behavior is perhaps the most significant discovery in the paper. The researchers demonstrated that IDV severely limits innate immune sensing.
Okay, how?
Well, when a typical virus enters a human cell, the cell's internal sensors detect the foreign viral RNA. And this detection triggers a massive cascading alarm system known as the interferon signaling pathway.
Let's break down this alarm system for a second. Interpreting the deep dive here, interferons are essentially warning signals, right?
Yeah.
A cell detects a virus and releases interferons, like, say, interferon lambda 1. And these interferons flood the surrounding area and bind to neighboring cells, telling them to immediately turn on their antiviral defenses.
Yeah, they tell everyone to get ready.
Right, and these defenses are called interferon-stimulated genes, or ISGs. So ISGs are basically the cellular lockdown doors slamming shut to stop the virus from spreading.
That's a perfect analogy. And the researchers needed to prove that IDV was actively tampering with this early warning system. To do this, they utilized a brilliant piece of biological engineering called A549 dual cells.
Okay, what makes them dual?
These are human lung cells that have been genetically modified to include a luciferase reporter.
Okay, luciferase, that's the enzyme that makes fireflies glow, right?
It is.
So they essentially wired a firefly gene directly into the cell's internal fire alarm.
That is the exact mechanism, yeah. When the cell's interferon alarm system detects a viral threat, the cell literally emits light. It glows in the dark.
That is so cool.
It's amazing. The brightness of the luminescence corresponds directly to the strength of the immune response. So when the research team infected these reporter cells with human influenza A, the cells lit up brilliantly. The internal sensors detected the threat, the alarm rang loud and clear, and the interferon pathway was fully activated.
But what happened when they dropped the IDV strains onto these firefly cells? Did they glow?
The luminescence was drastically weaker. The IDV strains induced a profoundly muted interferon response. The virus was inside the cell, actively replicating, making copies of itself, but the alarm system was barely whispering.
Wow.
Yeah. And because the interferon release was so incredibly low, there was a correspondingly lower activation of those protective ISGs in the surrounding cells. The cellular lockdown doors were simply never triggered to close.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Going back to our burglar analogy, IDV is like a thief wearing an invisibility cloak. It doesn't fight the immune system's security guards. It just prevents them from ever seeing it on the security camera.
Exactly. It just sneaks by.
But what if the guards are already looking for it? Like, what if the alarm is already ringing before the virus even shows up?
The researchers asked that exact question.
Hmm.
They needed to determine if IDV was inherently immune to the security guards themselves, or if it was just exceptionally good at hiding from the cameras. So to test this, they performed a pre-treatment experiment. They took human cells and manually exposed them to interferon before introducing the IDV virus.
So they pulled the fire alarm themselves, putting the whole cellular facility on lockdown before the burglar even arrived?
Exactly. By pre-treating the cells, they established a strong antiviral state in advance. All those protective ISGs were fully activated. And under these conditions, when IDV was introduced, its replication was potently crushed.
Oh, really?
Yes. It was completely restricted by the human immune response. This proves a critical vulnerability. IDV is highly sensitive to our immune system's effector mechanisms, the actual biological weapons used to dismantle viruses.
It just relies on not getting caught.
Right. It survives and thrives in human lungs by ensuring those weapons are never deployed in the first place. It relies entirely on immune evasion, not immune resistance.
Okay, so we now know the virus can infect us effortlessly. It utilizes receptors we have in abundance, and it successfully hides from our early immune system alarms by keeping the interferon response quiet. If agricultural workers are already showing antibodies, it means this silent transmission is likely happening right now. What does this mean for the future?
Well, this severely muted host response perfectly explains why human infections so far seem to be completely asymptomatic or subclinical.
Right, because people don't feel sick.
Exactly. People are catching it at county fairs or on farms, as the antibody data strongly suggests, but their immune systems eventually clear it without them ever feeling sick enough to seek medical attention. However, this is a very dangerous double-edged sword from an epidemiological perspective.
Because silent transmission means the virus is just out there practicing. I mean, if a virus makes you incredibly sick immediately, you stay home in bed and the transmission chain breaks.
Yep, the outbreak stops.
But if you feel perfectly fine, you go to work, you go to the grocery store, and the virus has ample opportunity to replicate, circulate, and adapt in human hosts without us ever noticing.
Furthermore, IDV is a highly adaptable pathogen. Like all influenza viruses, it mutates slowly over time through genetic drift. But much more concerningly, it is capable of a sudden, drastic evolutionary leap known as genetic shift.
Genetic shift? How does that work?
Well, the viral genome of influenza is segmented, kind of like a cassette tape. And the two major lineages of IDV currently circulating, there's one lineage primarily found in swine and another primarily found in cattle. They readily reassort with one another when they infect the same host.
Meaning they sort of mix and match their parts?
Exactly. They swap entire genetic cassettes. And this kind of genetic mixing, especially in an environment like a massive livestock exhibition where you have multiple species, is a classic mechanism for viruses to suddenly acquire entirely new dangerous traits.
So it's out there, mingling at county fairs, quietly jumping into human airways, staying hidden from the immune system, and potentially swapping genetic material.
Yeah. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the data that emerges is pretty sobering. IDV possesses almost all the biological traits required to become a human respiratory pathogen.
Almost all of them.
Right. We know it transmits through the air between mammalian lab surrogates. We now know it replicates highly efficiently in native human airway tissues, utilizing abundant receptors. And we know it successfully evades our initial innate immune detection. From an evolutionary standpoint, It is merely a very small step away from sustaining human-to-human transmission.
It's important to acknowledge the limitations of the current study, though, right? While this team definitively proved human airway compatibility, and they demonstrated the stealth mechanism, this specific research didn't map out the exact evolutionary mutations that would be required for the virus to become fully efficiently airborne between humans.
That's a very fair point. We know it functions beautifully within the tissue of a single human, but sustained airborne transmission across a whole population requires a highly complex orchestration of biological factors.
Right.
The virus must maintain stability while floating in the air, and it requires highly calibrated binding affinities to ensure it infects the next host efficiently. The researchers clearly note that the next critical steps in this field must include dissecting the specific viral proteins responsible for this immune evasion.
Did they mention which proteins?
Yeah, they point specifically to dissecting the viral antagonists known as the M1 and NS1 proteins to understand exactly how they silence that interferon alarm. Furthermore, this research underscores an urgent need to massively ramp up our active surveillance programs directly at these human-animal interfaces.
Which brings up a profound question for anyone paying attention to global health. If the only thing keeping this virus from becoming a pandemic is receptor availability or a random genetic mutation during a cassette swap, are we looking in the wrong places for the next big outbreak? Should we be watching county fairs in the Midwest as closely as we watch overseas wet markets?
It is a question that completely challenges our standard biosecurity paradigms. We tend to focus so heavily on exotic locales and wild animal reservoirs for viral emergence. But this comprehensive research highlights that novel zoonotic threats are circulating robustly right now in our own agricultural backyards.
In our petting zoos.
Exactly. The human-animal interface is everywhere, from commercial farms to petting zoos. And IDV proves quite elegantly that a virus doesn't need to be loud, destructive, or immediately lethal to be highly successful at crossing the species barrier.
Let's distill all of these complex virology data points down to the absolute core truth of the deep dive. Influenza D virus, currently circulating heavily in cattle and swine populations, can effortlessly infect and replicate within human respiratory tissues by sneaking past our early innate immune defenses.
Beautifully summarized.
And while it currently lacks the final evolutionary adaptations required for sustained human-to-human spread, its rapid evolution, genetic mixing, and silent transmission make it a highly credible, under-the-radar zoonotic threat. What does this mean for the future of global pandemic preparedness, and how long can a virus knock on our biological front door before it finally breaks through?
That is the million-dollar question.
This episode was based on an open-access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science base by base.
End. We watch the numbers climb again. A stranger riding in the breath, soft as snow and sharp as depth. It learns our doors, it finds the latch, slips past the lights that ought to catch. The alarms stay low, the screens stay dim, but something new is moving in. So raise your eyes, hold steady here. A quiet storm is drawing near. If silence is the way it spreads, we'll answer loud with what we've read. We won't look away, we'll track the thread. In their way walls it builds its fire. High tide copies climbing higher, while signal bells refuse to ring. A muted warning in the wing. But there's a shield we've seen before, a message at the cell's front door. A single spark and cuts the chasing down to size. So raise your eyes, hold steady here. A quiet storm is drawing near. We'll watch the edges where we meet. Count every footprint in the heat. With open hands and clear sight, we'll catch the dark before it bites.